Chapter 4. In the morning, I wake to find myself sprawled across the imperial bed. Where I had been hugging Tor's torso, I'm now draped across his legs. He's sitting up against the headboard, drinking tea. The Angora is tucked over me now, and his hand is settled atop my head. I feel raw, wounded, aching to take the blanket away and pull his fingers into my hair, to let him scratch gently at my scalp, play with my ear, caress my cheek. I'm in his bed.
Conju's already been and gone,
he murmurs.
Ludvig is still watching over us. I was trying to decide how to wake you. I never imagined you as such a heavy sleeper.
I never imagined that you imagined me sleeping at all, I say, and he stiffens slightly, the kind of movement only someone who knows him well would recognize.
Or someone wrapped around his thighs, I add to myself. Or not to myself, I suppose. I've cared for you as a man since the first time I met you, Lord Madang,
he says sharply.
Since I thought I'd blinded you.
I didn't mean you didn't think of me as a man, I offer, trying for apologetic instead of the vague peevishness that is more likely before I've even sat up in bed. I meant I didn't know you think of me softly. I didn't know you dreamt of me.
Ah,
he says.
I am not my most coherent right now.
Did you sleep poorly? He turns the lion gaze to me dryly.
My night was much more restful than one might think,
he says.
You need coffee, don't you? I'll have Conju fetch you something.
Conju? Oh, he said Conju had already been gone. Conju has seen me, draped over his radiancy's legs. Gods, the taboos will probably require that they burn the bedding or something. Conju must be furious with me.
He was surprised,
Tor says mildly.
If he is furious, he certainly won't indicate it in my presence. I made it clear that you were here at my invitation. And it's just like you to worry about the sheets, my dear.
It's not really about the sheets, although it would be a terrible waste. It's about Conju, whether I've made his life more difficult.
Undoubtedly,
Tor says, and at my astounded look,
you have always made his life more difficult, my dear, but he has never resented you for it. Our good cavalier loves a challenge.
And Cleofer has always obliged to provide those in spades, Conju says, swanning in with a tray bearing coffee, two mugs, and two plates of pastries. Good morning, my lords. Cleofer, your household sent over two outfits. I will have them attend you while I see to his radiancy's bath. Sayovawin will be ready to see you both at the second bell, but given the hour, we may wish to send word to—
We'll see him at the second bell,
Tor says firmly.
My bath can wait.
Conju nods, but I see something around his eyes that indicates surprise. It occurs to me that he might think we have been doing things that would require bathing before having company, and my cheeks flame. Conju darkens too, just slightly. His radiancy probably flushes as well, but of course we would never be able to tell. Franzel frets over me, having decided that Fanny should not be exposed to my nonsense. It occurs to me that I should probably not tell him that I spent the night in his radiancy's bed, whereupon I do exactly that. He looks at me with eyes wide beyond his normal sensibilities, and offers a smile that I cannot help but describe as tremorous.
You can rely on my discretion, my Lord Madang, he says.
Not like that, I say, annoyed, but he gives a trill and nods and straightens my overrobe. Why must everyone assume it's like that?
We wish the best for you, sir.
He bites his lip, briefly undecided.
Your mantle, Fanny sent one with a warmer lining. You mentioned yesterday that you were cold. Sir Roden passed it along. She wanted me to convey—
Firm chastisement for not expressing my needs clearly. I would expect no less. Give her my thanks, and stop her before she relines my whole wardrobe. I'll let her know how this feels. I don't notice being cold. She needn't go to the effort. I know she's already had to adapt my waistline to accommodate my dance weight.
It is our passion to see you comfortable, sir.
He ventures to let warmth color his voice, and I'm flooded with emotion. Thank you, Franzel.
I hope you all know that even if things go wrong, I will make sure that you are taken care of. His eyes go soft and dark and worried. We do know, sir. But we have every faith that between our two households we will... He clears his throat. His Radiancy will see you back to health, sir. I think I must blush terribly at that, which certainly does nothing to help my case. Franzel straightens my mantle again, unnecessarily this time, bows, and leaves me. It's not until he's gone that I realize my mistake. I'm alone again, and this time the panic rises fast. His Radiancy is being dressed, a process that takes much longer than mine, and even after yesterday's confessions, I'm not keen to burst into his dressing room, so I follow Franzel, heading out to my lord's study, intending to burst past the antechamber where at least there'll be trusted guards, but there's no need, because Gaudi is in the study, startled by my dramatic entrance. He rushes to my side and grasps at my shoulders. "Uncle Kep," he says, speaking clearly over my own useless babble. "Tell me what you need me to do." "Hug me," I say, and he throws his arms around me, pulls me in fiercely. "I've got you," he whispers, and I half collapse against him, relieved and startled and guilty, guilty that I need this, that I need touch and my lord has managed without for 1,000 years. Gotti's hand touches the back of my head. He cradles me as if I am a child, and I take in just how much he has grown. He is an inch taller than I am. Now that I am dancing again, I am not so much wider, but he is strong, too, underneath the shapeless robes. "Are you all right?" he asks without pulling back, and I laugh shakily. "I don't even know how to answer that. I'm completely out of my element," I say. "Are you safe? I can't be left alone. The curse, or poison, or whatever it is... it's a compulsion, or part of it is, and when there's no one in earshot, it knows. It feels like a swarm of insects in my head. It's horrible. Franzel didn't know." Gaudi pulls back as I'm speaking, nods solemnly, and fixes my mantle. I laugh again, slightly hysterical. "Thank you, Gaudi. I'm so proud of you. I hope you know that." He blushes to match me. "I do," he says. "But it's lovely to hear, nonetheless, Uncle Kep. Thank you. His Radiancy said something to you yesterday that I didn't understand. Something about a protocol." "Oh, that's..." Gaudi says, and looks flustered. "Is that what I look like when I'm flustered?" Of course, His Radiancy chooses that moment to arrive. Gaudi and I both make obeisances, and when we rise, I suspect that His Radiancy had rolled his eyes at us when we dropped, but I decide not to ask. Except, of course, that I say that out loud. But he doesn't answer, which means yes.
"Good morning, Sayovawan,"
His Radiancy says, and they share a moment of amusement that I try not to resent.
"Tell me, did you sleep?"
"My lord, I lay down with my eyes closed for 2 hours," Gaudi says, "which Domine Fairvello says provides some of the benefits of sleep."
"Do they? That is good to know,"
he answers dryly.
"To try to follow my orders will have to be enough, I suppose. What have you learned?"
"My lord, we have one potential candidate who may be in the Fens. There's another who is certainly in Greater Solara who meets your spoken criteria, but who we fear may not be suitable." Conjua decorated His Radiancy today with that subtle gold-tint shadow above and below his eyes, which is always a striking effect, but all the more so when he lifts his brows. He gestures wordlessly for Gaudi to continue. "My lord, one of the daughters of Saya Kalikiri is aware of a mage who lives in one of the Fen communities. He's known to be reclusive and to serve as a kind of healer for the Fen's people, and purportedly has some talent for scrying that he has used successfully to predict droughts and other agricultural phenomena outside of the sphere of influence of the palace's climate control, which was how he came to the attention of Saya Kalikiri's daughter. Their community is insular, and certainly considered primitive by the standards of the court." In other words, the Uranatha would have nothing to do with him. Gaudi nods acknowledgement at me. "We have runners in place prepared to search for him, but we don't know exactly where he might be." His Radiancy nods grimly.
"And the other?"
"A close friend of Sayo Ayoru," Gaudi says, She has a strong talent for magic. She is in Solara. We are entirely sure she is not under the thumb of the Orinatha, and Dairo assured us that she'd be willing to attend this morning.
But?
Gaudi hesitates and looks at me sideways. She is 16, my lord. His Radiancy's eyes flash, and he brings a hand to rub across the back of his head, a stress gesture I recognize too well. He glances at Ludvig, and I hadn't even noticed Khondru hovering by the door, and then at me.
Kip?
He asks gently. Too risky, I say. The reason you can't do it is because it's dangerous. I won't ask a child to do it.
I agree, unfortunately,
His Radiancy says.
Excellent work, Sayavawan. Please send your runners. And let us send for the Mother of Mountains as well. If we cannot find the Fen Sage, I want another option on hand.
Gaudi bows and meets my eyes briefly. He tugs his gaze away quickly, but not quickly enough, and then retreats before I have managed to fumble through interpreting what I saw. He doesn't think we'll find the Sage, I say. He thinks we should use Ayaru's friend.
Well,
Tor says briskly.
We shall see, yes?
We fight at breakfast. I can't say that I've ever fought with the Sun on Earth before, and I can't say that I enjoy it. He will not entertain the notion of returning to his, our, work, no matter how strongly I make the case. Not even when I try to explain how much worse it will be for me, for us both, to be behind. Finally, Khondru points out that while my absence can be explained by sickness, the Emperor's absence will cause, or in fact has already caused, distress on the part of the court. It is too soon after his own illness for it to be seen as anything but weakness, and when Tor tries to argue that we could tell some version of the truth, Rodin nearly has an apoplexy. You're upsetting us. You're being unreasonable, I say, and for once my ailment is convenient, because I see that strike him. I know you don't want to leave me, but for the good of our people, you must, at least for a short time. The room goes quiet, and Tor bows his head. When he lifts it again, he is glaring at me.
As you wish, Lord Madame.
He bites.
Ludvig, stay with my Lord Chancellor until I return. Rodin, continue your investigation with as much haste as you can manage prudently. Khondru, let us find the right appointments to keep where I might be seen to be hale and in a poor temper enough that we may defer the rest without unbalancing Zunid.
He and Khondru glide away, and Rodin follows with an apologetic look over his shoulder. Ludvig moves to sit next to me at the breakfast table.
If I didn't know that you couldn't help it, I would have called that a masterstroke of manipulation, and then I would have told you to be very careful,
he says quietly.
What? You said our people, Ludvig says.
And? Surely I've done so before. Ludvig looks at me with the steady patience for which I so love him.
And you slept in his bed, Cleofer.
I want to say that it doesn't mean anything, but I can't say something that isn't true. I'm not trying to manipulate him, I say instead.
I know, he says. But I needed to be sure that you knew how it sounded, even though none of us would think that of you.
I didn't, I bite.
But you do now.
Ludvig's mouth twists, an expression I can't read.
Do try to be careful with him. I know you can't help what's happening to you now, but just be mindful that he feels very strongly about you, which gives you a great deal of power over him.
I want to say something about how absurd it is to worry about having power over a man who could literally have any of us killed at a moment's notice, but that would require that I believe it. I don't know what I'm doing, I say instead. I don't know what he wants, and he thinks I'm vulnerable now, and I am, but I was the first one to reach out to him, to see him, and that means so much to him. What if he's only... if it's just that I'm safe...
You are safe, Ludvig acknowledges, but it isn't just that you're safe. Cleofer, I've known him since he woke up after the fall.
He loves me, I say, quiet, numb. The fact that I can say it doesn't mean it's objectively true, but it means that I believe it. He said, differently than you or Conjurer Roden.
I assumed so, Ludwig says. He had clearly come to some understanding yesterday, in his study.
He held me, I whisper. Ludwig gives a hum, a nod, affirmation. But I don't know what I'm doing. You know that I'm not... I don't...
You aren't normally motivated by physical intimacy, Ludwig says. I know. I've never been much interested in it either, to be honest. But I know you do take lovers sometimes, and I have always wondered if you might make an exception for him.
Why? Ludwig's smile is soft, with no condescension whatsoever, which is the only reason I can bear it.
You don't look at him like someone who is entirely uninterested, he says. Ever since the vacation.
Ever since the moon, lady, I admit. But that isn't entirely true, is it? Even before the eclipse, I had sat on the sandbar with him. I had watched him swim and play his harp and noticed him. I hadn't noticed noticing. I hadn't let myself. It was too much. Too big for me. Too far from what I understood of myself. And at the time, I'd thought perhaps it was just the place. Or perhaps I was just dazzled by him, by seeing him anew. I'd never been much dazzled by him in the first place. Pleased for the chance to serve him, but not overawed, because he was not, at first, God's treason, particularly awe-inspiring.
He wasn't, Ludwig agrees quietly, until you woke him up.
Like an aurora, I say, and bury my face in my hands. Please don't have me arrested.
Cleofer, you slept in his bed, Ludwig says again, dry and amused.
And you know where Fitzroy Angersell is, I remember suddenly. Gods, Ludwig, don't tell me. He doesn't want me to know.
I heard, he says gently. I could hear most of your conversation last night. I have to stand where I can hear if he is in distress, where I could hear if he called me.
He's embarrassed.
For me?
I'm not ashamed, I tell him.
I am sorry I could not offer you more privacy.
I don't care, I say, and his eyes widen. How do you not understand that? I trust you, Ludwig. With anything.
With him.
He sighs heavily, nods, as if this isn't what reality has been for hundreds of years.
Only for you, Kip,
he says, and something about the nickname strikes me hard. Learning that I'm telling the truth should not be such a radical shift to your reality, I snap, and his face closes so abruptly that it's like a gate slamming shut in my face. As soon as it's happened, it eases again. But I see I have shaken him somehow.
That's not what I meant, he says, pained. Having the business about the Red Company in the open, can you not understand what that means for Roden and I, at least?
Oh. Oh, of course. This is not only about my feelings. What is wrong with me? Why am I so... so strange right now, so blind to implications.
You've been cursed or poisoned, Ludwig points out. How are you feeling? Would you like to do something else? I was wondering, earlier, whether reading aloud might satisfy the compulsion, or if you would have to believe everything you were reading in order to say it. That's how it is with Verdivan, but it might be worth trying.
What is Verdivan?
It's a much simpler truth serum. Extremely difficult to produce. Given in small quantities, it can be used as a humane method of interrogation. It doesn't force you to speak, but you can't say things you believe to be untrue. All of the Imperial Guards take a dose on their oath day. Personal guards, including Roden and I, repeat the tradition ourselves every few years before His Radiancy.
Have you considered asking others to do it?
like you were Khonju. Not that I recall, at least not seriously. You don't bear weapons in proximity to his radiancy. And, as I said, it's very difficult to procure, so you must use it judiciously. He isn't particularly fond of the ritual, in any case. He would never approve putting you through it.
He pauses. He looks at me with such gentleness, and I suppose I'm very vulnerable right now, but I cannot help but feel I don't deserve it.
Kip, tell me how to help you.
I would if I knew, I say, and then, what can you tell me about the Red Company? Storytelling turns out to work nicely. Ludwig tells me things I already know quite well. Who the company are, what adventures they went on. I'm obliged to correct him on a few occasions, until at one point I suspect aloud that he's making mistakes on purpose to test me, and a very subtle quirk of his eyebrow confirms it for me. But by and large, I'm able to listen, or at least comment minimally and inanely, and treasonously, but he doesn't mind that, it seems. He's surprised to hear some of my more pungent thoughts about Domina of Ramapol. He seems less surprised than I think he should be when I explain what had happened in Tor's study that day.
It is good to hear that you think of him as Tor, he tells me. Names are important to him.
Yes, the way he talked about Fitzroy Ingersoll, I sigh. I thought at first perhaps they were brothers. That seemed like the sort of secret Eritanir would keep. But the more I think about it, I'm not asking you to tell me. I'm sure you know. I wonder if they might have been lovers. The way he yearned when I said the name Ludwig. Ludwig's face is stony. I sigh. I was going to marry Julinar of the Sea, I say. She made him ginger cookies. Ludwig mutters something about me being ridiculous and stalks to the door, returning with a tray. He pours us large cups of coffee and buries his face in his own. Are there rumors about Julinar? She was Eleanor Al, wasn't she? Maybe when we retire and I go looking for Basil, I can keep an eye out for her as well. Fitzroy Ingersoll always says the best way to find something is by looking for something else entirely.
Himself would like that, he says, getting to adventure with you.
He'll already have been on his own grand adventure.
Not with you.
I don't exactly have the best luck with adventuring, Ludwig.
All the more reason to bring along a great mage. Roden is going to Vunra when he retires.
He blushes, perhaps anticipating my question. And you?
If you were earnest in your suggestion, I don't mind the idea of keeping a household together in Gorjo City or wherever you like. I've never been able to look much past his retirement. Keeping him safe and sane has been my life's work. As far as I'm concerned, that's the highest of callings.
I've never exactly thought of Ludwig's work in those terms, but it is a mighty cause and a hard act to follow, especially after 1,000 years. You guarded him even when he was in the fall sleep, I observe. Did you think of him as a man even then?
Sometimes, Ludwig says, like a sleeping prince in the fairy stories. But usually, I thought he was dead, and his body just hadn't realized it yet.
I shiver. We had all thought that, during those years, at some time or other. Dark dreams. It had been a matter of time before someone would decide to seize the reins of the wounded empire, if it ever healed enough to be an empire again. Perhaps I had believed it less than others. I still didn't feel that I had achieved whatever destiny the call of the portrait had implied. I still don't, although I'm closer today than I ever have been. Yesterday I had said Fanoa in front of his radiancy. I shiver again, and Ludwig sets a hand on my shoulder. I did mean it, about wanting to live together, I say, to distract myself from thinking about that broader dream.
I'm glad. Roden and Khonju like the idea, too. Have you asked him?
No. I'm sure I will have before the day is out, though, now that you've said it. It isn't just me, is it? You want him there, too?
If you wanted to be.
He smiles. I'm quite sure he will. He'll need to have his adventures, too, but he will like to have a home. I think so, too. I keep imagining Sayadorn's kitchen, with all of us round the table. Roden will cook his fantastically spicy foods. Kanji will have a system for the pantry. Ludwig will defuse our squabbles. I'll keep the fire, of course. Tor will... I don't know. Maybe he'll make illusions to amuse us. Make stars fall from the ceiling. He'll find plenty of ways to torment the rest of us. Eating with edged implements. Playing his lute. Ludwig suggests meaningfully. Oh, yes. I wonder if he and Fitzroy Angersaw learned to play together, or Fitzroy taught him. I need to stop thinking about Fitzroy Angersaw. It's making Ludwig so twitchy. Do you not like him?
Who?
Fitzroy Angersaw. Kip, you don't have to answer. I know I shouldn't ask, but I can't not. I haven't seen you so emotive about anyone except his radiancy. And perhaps Kanji when he's being a pest. Ludwig says. Only, you're a poet in your own right, so I would think that you would admire him.
He bade me not to say anything, Cleofer. You know I won't disobey him. Not even for you.
I know! I'm not asking you to. Well, I literally am, but I don't mean to be. He said there was never any proof. I can't figure out what that means.
Ludwig tries valiantly to change the subject.
Eventually, he gets me on the topic of Princess Oriana, which seems almost like cheating, but I hold my small, treasonous court on the topic of her many inadequacies until Kanji returns.
He'll be back shortly, he says briskly. He's in a mood. Cleofer, will you have lunch with him?
Of course, I say automatically, and then, alarmed, I'm not sure that's my choice to make.
Don't be absurd. He always wants to have lunch with you.
Does he? Then why don't we?
He doesn't want to impose, Kanji says.
He is the Emperor, I say.
I am usually the one pointing that out to you, Cleofer. And what do you always say in return?
That he's a man, I say, vaguely bewildered. It would be hard to have lunch with him every day, but...
Good. I'll make it happen. 2 or 3 times a week. I'll work with your appointment secretary to ensure I don't make a mess of your schedule.
I should feel bullied, but I'm entirely delighted. I tell Ludwig.
We know,
Ludwig says fondly. Why is his radiancy upset?
I'm sure he'll tell you over lunch,
Kanji says. He doesn't confide in me about matters of state.
He's not upset about matters of state,
Ludwig murmurs, and my responding query, inane as it is swallowed by the rap of spears and his radiancy's return. He doesn't look ill-tempered on first glance, but I can see tension around his eyes. He is dressed in court costume, somewhat more fragrantly yellow than my favorites. Not that I have opinions on his radiancy's wardrobe. It seems I do. I hadn't noticed.
I had,
Ludwig murmurs, very quietly, but not quiet enough to escape his radiancy's trained ear. His lips quirk, just slightly.
Well, my Lord Chancellor.
No change, my lord. Kanji says we're to have lunch together.
Good. Now, I've been seen about court, and my good health and poor temper both well noted enough to ensure word will carry. Are you satisfied that I've done my duty?
Yes, my lord, I say, horrified that I cannot protest that it is not my place to so presume to judge him. But his expression lightens slightly, inexplicably, and he gestures for me to precede him onto the terrace. Lunch is served. I express opinions about it. His radiancy's expression lightens yet further. I tell him about Enya's plans for her restaurant. After a cooked custard dessert, I ask him how he would like her to name the flambéed fruit dish that she had promised to name after him.
What do you think?
He asks. I'm not good at naming, I say wryly. At the time, I had thought she might name it Sun and Glory or Rising Stars, but I'd rather she name it something that would make you smile. He does smile at that. I thrill gently. I adore making him smile.
You are very nearly the only person who cares about how I feel,
he tells me, and I wish I could deny it. If they knew, I sigh, if the people knew.
Our people,
he says, very quietly, something between a correction and a question. And I think if I was entirely myself, I would slide from my chair and fall to my face in obeisance. which he would hate, of course. Ludwig implied that if he didn't know my circumstances, he would worry that I was manipulating you, I admit, and Tor laughs with just enough bitterness to sting.
No, Kip,
he says.
No.
It didn't even occur to me that it might sound that way.
But it was the truth,
Tor says, enunciating.
They're your people as much as they have ever been mine. More. You know them. You're able to walk among them in ways that I...
He cuts himself off, frustrated.
Don't you understand, Kip?
I do, I blurt. I have been, my lord, all this time, trying to raise up the world so that you might step off your pedestal. I understand that it is not good for you or them, the distance that separates you from everything.
Yes,
he says grimly.
You are the revolutionary I always wished to be. You have always been willing to stand and do what is right, no matter the risk to yourself.
The risk is never greater than the reward, I say reasonably. We go next to his private study. Picabe and Otto are on duty now. They pay no attention at all to my babbling, and then Tor closes the door behind us and eyes me. What is it, my lord? His lips pull tight.
You would never allow me to languish under such a curse if you believed that you might have the power to solve it,
he says flatly. I'm magic null, but even I can feel his power building as he speaks. My lord! I cannot, of course, deny it. But I don't want you to. Tor, please. I couldn't bear it if you came to harm trying to help me.
I would say the same in your place,
he says.
Would that stop you?
Yes, I say emphatically, desperately. How can you ask that? Yes, of course. I've wanted to hold your hand, to embrace you for hundreds of years. If nothing else, I would have done so after your heart attack, once I knew it would not kill me. Knowing that it would hurt you for any harm to come to me is the only thing that has prevented me from it. I am able to pause, then. He is shocked. Somehow, I have shocked him. Somehow, he did not understand this. The itching tension in the room fades. He turns around and lifts a trembling hand to his face.
I need you to be well,
he says, finally, still not looking at me.
I need to hear you speak to me of your own will.
I want to reassure him. I will be soon. Soon? But I can't say it. I don't know. Instead, I say, I'm here. I say, talk to me. And he does, eventually. He sits on the divan, finds another length of fabric to layer between us, and relays the trials of his morning, the news of our world.